from our virtual studios in Portugal
and Camarillo, California.
It's time once again for The Marketing Geeks with your hosts, Andro Sturgeon
and Justin Womack. And we have a very, very special show today because we are going to be talking about email marketing, all the way from deliverability to copywriting to mastering your emails.
That's right. Yes, email is still relevant in the year 2018/2019. And we're going to bring it all to you. Not only that, we are also going to bring you geek news and, of course, the Sex Robot Report.
You know that we missed that last week, Andros. You know that you forgot to do it last week. We had complaints. The listeners were terrified. They were mortified. And now we're bringing it back to you. So don't worry.
I know. They thought they switched formats. But without any further ado, of all the geek podcasts out there, this is one of them. Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, it is time once again for The Marketing Geeks.
We are live.
How are you, my friend? Guess where I am?
I heard in the intro that you're in Portugal. Is that true?
That's right. That's right. I am in Portugal right now. Part of the thing about being a marketing person of my ilk is that I can do this from anywhere. So I'm recording. I'm in a little town called Nazarene, and it is they have really good fish, and it's great. And so today I woke up. I was working on some client work. I was overseeing a website. I was putting a proposal together, working for a huge company. So wish me luck with that. It's good to be me. That's all I can say.
It must be good to be you, buddy. But you know, it's good to be me too, because I'm recording in the exact same spot. It's raining outside. But you know what's changed is I am using Google Wi-Fi now. So I took the leap. I bought the Google Wi-Fi units. It's a three pack. So it's got the signal booster on a mesh network. And it is awesome. It took my internet speed 5x. So I'm getting 5x on the Wi-Fi speed because of the Google Wi-Fi devices.
Wow. So you're a convert.
I'm a convert, and they're pretty easy to set up. You just plug them in, and you just connect it through your app, and they get you a new network. And I'm a convert, so I went for it. I heard good things about it. I took the dive, and I'm happy with it so far.
Nice. Well, I will. I'm gonna have to do that myself. So I'm glad you jumped on the grenade.
You're glad I took the financial risk.
That's right. Now we know. So here we are, ladies and gentlemen. It is in all of our seven listeners. It is time for another grand edition of the Marketing Geeks. We have an amazing show. We're going to be talking about email marketing, and you know, email marketing is one of these things that it's definitely gotten a little tougher over the past years because a lot of people use Gmail, and if you go into your Gmail is split up by default into three different sections. And those sections are your primary email, your social email, and your promotions. And a lot of times what will happen is your email marketing emails will either go into social or promotions, usually promotions. And so a lot of times people will miss those. But there's ways around that. We'll show you some tricks on how to make sure people get your emails and what you can do to guarantee a slightly higher opening than industry average. What is industry average, Mr. Womack?
Industry average is for opening rate, it really depends on the industry. I mean, if you have a warm list, you could get it as high as 40 to 50%. If it's a cold list, you want to get, I'd say, 15 to 20%. It depends on what kind of list you have. I mean, are these like your, is it a client list? Is it a list of people that opted in on their free will, or is it a list that you purchased? So depending on that type of list, you're going to get a different open rate. So I would say that it really depends on the type of list that you're marketing to.
Yeah. And then the other question, of course, is how do you grow that list to begin with? And I think we're going to cover all of that stuff in the show. In fact, as I just talked about it, like growing your list, opting in, all of that stuff, like what to put in your email. I think it's this is a pretty big concept, isn't it?
It's a pretty big topic. And we may have to break it up into multiple parts. We'll see. But deliverability has been something I've been focused on all year. So I've really, really gone deep on deliverability, and I'll talk about some of the higher end concepts in this episode to really get your emails in the inbox versus the spam box or the promotions box. So there's some complicated stuff. I'll go through it. You may not understand it on a first listen, but we're gonna talk about it anyway.
Yeah, and I have to say that Justin is definitely one of the more brilliant email marketers out there. He's the guy. So when he speaks, you better make sure that you check that inbox.
Because I do the copywriting and the email, and I run the back end.
That's right. That's right. You know how to use everything from Infusionsoft to automators on MailChimp to all of that stuff, right?
Yeah, Fusionsoft, MailChimp, Aweber, ActiveCampaign, ConvertKit. I mean, I could name like 1,000 of them. Klaviyo, there's a ton of them.
Yeah, so it's a good thing that we have you as a guest on our program because...
Yeah, I'm glad that you invited me to be on the show this week.
It's
great to be here as a guest on the Marketing Geeks. Very special honor.
So we got some news here for you. Are you ready for our big news?
I'm ready for it.
All right, here we go. Ladies and gentlemen, it is time for Marketing Geek News. And that's our new music. Welcome to it.
I love it.
YouTube is dropping the paywall from some of its original series and exploring advertising instead. I actually noticed this the other day because I've become a podcast junkie myself, and I was listening to this interview with Ralph Macchio regarding the Cobra Kai series, which is a sequel to the Karate Kid movie, which is amazing, from the 80s. And they did a sequel series, and so he was talking about it. So I wanted to check it out, and I noticed that it was actually on YouTube without me having to pay for YouTube Premium. And I thought, oh, that's interesting. So it looks like they're actually dropping some of the original show paywall where you had to pay for YouTube Red in order to see some of these shows. And so this is from Marketing Land, and it says that the details are still in the works. But in a strategic about face, YouTube announced it will drop the paywall from its original programming and make shows available on the free ad-supported platform with 2 billion users. Until now, consumers were paying subscription-based YouTube Premium service available in 29 countries to see most of YouTube's original programming. And what they're also going to do is they're going to drop some of the scripted programs that they've been developing. So it looks like from the everything I'm seeing here that YouTube is pulling out of the premium streaming game. Which is interesting because what's your favorite YouTube original show, Justin?
I've never watched any of the YouTube original shows, and I pay for the premium YouTube. I pay for YouTube Red, but I've never used it to watch a single original show. The only thing I use it for is to watch videos ads-free and also to watch videos while I minimize them so I can listen to videos and minimize it on my phone. I love that feature. I'll pay $15 just for that feature.
It's because of you. They're not going to make any more shows. So thank you, pal.
No, Cobra Kai is amazing. I've heard the show's amazing. Yeah. I just haven't watched it.
Oh, I really want to see it. I was a big fan of the movie. But you know, I think it's also Disney is coming out with their streaming service, and they are not holding back. They are really just pulling out all the stops for this. I mean, The Mandalorian, which is the Boba Fett show, which is going to be produced and directed by Jon Favreau, looks like it's probably going to be pretty good. They're going to do some original Marvel shows, including Scarlet Witch and Vision, which is going to be probably pretty awesome as well. The Loki show.
And they also announced they also have The Winter Soldier and Falcon of a show too.
That's right. And meanwhile, they're killing off the Netflix shows. So, you know, in that same vein, I just heard that Daredevil was canceled. So that means that Jessica Jones and The Punisher are next on Netflix. So, you know, it looks like Disney's really gearing up to take on the streaming business seriously, especially because they own this huge library of films, including, you know, Hollywood Pictures and Miramax and, of course, all the Disney. Well,
and all the kids content and even like the Disney Junior or whatever. I mean, all that stuff is they're going to crush it. I think that this is going to be a big success for them personally.
Absolutely. And they know it. And I think that YouTube is kind of like, well, do we keep investing in this? Nobody's watching these shows, or do we just go back to what we're good at? So I think
there's more money in advertising than in, I mean, if you're going to put a paywall on the shows, like I wouldn't pay $15 for those shows, alone. I pay for the no ads and that. So I'm paying for the no ads. So I'm a customer that it doesn't matter. The shows aren't a real benefit for me. So I think so they can still get my money. I'm still going to pay them $15 a month. But it makes more sense to throw advertising on these shows and, you know, and charge a decent amount of money. They can, you know, show ads every 15 minutes or so. So I think it makes a lot of sense. You're going to get more revenue in the long haul.
Yeah. And you know, and I think that people are still using YouTube, which is interesting because we are actually doing a video advertising / Google advertising webinar for free in the next few weeks. When is that?
I'm checking the date right now.
I got you off guard.
I'll get back
sorry.
To you. Oh, here it is. No, it's December 20th. December 20th at 1 p.m. Pacific Standard Time. So December 20th. And the link will be in the show notes. It was in the show notes last episode too. But we'll be doing it on Google AdWords and YouTube advertising. So we'll be covering both of those in this month's special webinar.
Which is very effective. In other news, this is kind of interesting. This is more my realm. WordPress is going to release version 5.0 with its Gutenberg editor this week. So if you have a WordPress site, or you are, if you are a web developer, or you just happen to have a WordPress site yourself, there's going to be a massive update to WordPress. The biggest kind of shift with Gutenberg is that it comes included with it the Gutenberg editor. And the old style of WordPress used to be a bit more code heavy. You really had to know at least some HTML, hopefully some CSS if you wanted to really kind of get your hands dirty with doing some customized WordPress. But the Gutenberg editor makes it a lot easier for anybody to build a website. It's kind of a drag and drop interface. I'm personally a fan of the Divi Builder, which is a theme from Elegant Themes. And that's I've tended to use that quite a bit because the front end editor is pretty good. But Gutenberg, the new web builder for WordPress, basically takes a lot of these front end concepts and allows you to build a website without knowing any code. So it's interesting because a lot of the bread and butter of my business when I was first starting out had to do with building websites. And back then it was like knowing Elvish, you know, like trying to figure out how to build a website was like this secret sort of realm. And then, of course, things like Squarespace and Wix and now even WordPress itself has made it so easy for people that almost anyone can build a website without too much problem. And then
I've seen some of these like AI builders now. They're developing like artificial intelligence website builders. And I don't think they're very good yet, but they're coming. And they're going to be really good soon.
Yeah, and I've tried the Gutenberg editor in a pre-release. I actually don't like it that much. And I feel it's a little clunky, but this is just version one of that particular type of technology.
Yeah, so, it'll probably get better over time.
Right. So if you want to build a website, you know, there's no reason you can't build a website, even if you have no knowledge of it. And probably in a future episode, we're going to go over some SEO tips and tricks for WordPress. So that is kind of big news. And then you had something about Tumblr, right?
That's right. I guess I did. I thought you had that story, but I guess I'll cover that story.
Go ahead.
So Tumblr, which is an app that, what is it, like a photo sharing app?
No, it's a blogging app. Yeah, it's a blogging app.
Oh, it's a blogging app. Yeah. Okay. I don't even really use Tumblr, so I don't even know exactly that much about it. But it has recently been kind of taken over by adult content. And Tumblr has announced that in December, I think they gave a date. I don't know the date off the top of my head here. But they're going to be removing all adult content from the Tumblr platform. And they're probably going to lose a good percentage of their user base, I would imagine, because my understanding is that there was a lot of backlash on Twitter about this decision. And people were just like, if they take that away, who's ever going to go there?
Well, and yeah, this had to do with the fact that Apple was actually going to take the Tumblr app off the App Store due to adult content because it goes against their policy. Because there was explicit content that people were able to see through that app. And, you know, what would have been better is if they just filtered it out through the app itself, which I'm sure somebody thought about. But now they're just saying, well, we're not going to host any more adult content. And, you know, actually, this is kind of an interesting concept because there were a lot of people who curated erotica and a lot of women that curated erotica that was more geared towards women rather than just going to, you know, like your Pornhub or whatever. And so there were some people who actually used it as a legitimate blogging platform for adult content in a way that was more classy. But now that is going away. And, I don't feel that any material is really offensive unless because every type of material can be offensive depending on who you are and what your personal, you know, mores are about a certain subject. You know, what one person finds to be offensive, another person, you know, that's their thing. So I don't think that this is a really good idea for Tumblr. I think ultimately this is kind of the end of the road for them. And it was a business decision.
Yeah, I think so too.
Yeah. And, you know, somebody sat down with a calculator and did the numbers and just said, well, we have more users on using it on through the iPhone than we do, you know, that use the adult content. So they balanced it out and they just, you know, figured, well, we better just take it off. But I don't agree with that decision.
So time will tell.
Yeah.
Time will tell. All right, let's get into the main show. I think we've covered enough marketing news. I think I want to get into the email marketing stuff.
All right, let's do it.
Email marketing.
That was our new theme for the meat of the show. What do you got for me, man?
Well, let's start with email marketing deliverability. And so obviously when you're doing email marketing, one of the challenges is getting in the inbox. And the first thing when you're setting up an email that needs to be done is you need to authenticate your domain. And a lot of people don't even know this, but if you do not authenticate your domain, then the when you send your emails out, they won't know whether it's a spoofed email or a real email. And a spoofed email means that you just typed in somebody else's email address and it's not really from that email address, but it says it is. And then the real email, you know, meaning that this I've authenticated that this email is actually coming from this domain. So does that make sense, Andres? Am I saying that clearly?
Yeah, I mean, more or less. Basically, you know, it's if there isn't a legitimate domain, your emails are also going to get kind of put into the spam box. So, and sometimes this happens where, you know, if I get an email, it says your Dropbox account is full and has the Dropbox, branding. But if you look at it, it's from like dropboxx.com, right? So the legitimacy of the email address is super important.
Yeah, and to verify it, so there's actually some processes that you have to do in the back end of your hosting platform to truly verify it and increase your chances of deliverability. So there are things called like an SPF record, which stands for Sender Policy Framework. And what happens is most of the email platforms will give you a piece of code that is for your SPF record that you need to add into your DNS settings on the hosting platform. So I know for some of you, this is going to be way over your heads, and that's okay. But I just want to talk about it because it's pretty important, actually, and most people miss this. So to truly authenticate your domain, you really need to be adding these a couple pieces of code to the back end of the site. And one of them is called the Sender Policy Framework record. Another one is called the DKIM record. And DKIM is domain keys identified mail. And so the other one is called DMARC. So these are three different pieces of code. Sometimes they're just two that you need to add. But what they do is they will tell your sending platform or your hosting platform that you've authenticated. Let's say you're using MailChimp. So it'll tell the hosting platform that any emails coming from MailChimp are truly from your email address. And by doing that, it'll increase the probability that your emails will show up into the inbox of your end users. So this is something that, again, that most people don't know about this. It's something that I've really dove deep into this year. And so I just wanted to bring it up on the show because a lot of people do not authenticate their emails properly. And that's one of the reasons that they end up in spam.
And how do I do that?
You do that in the back end. So let's say you had GoDaddy hosting. So if you had GoDaddy hosting, you would go to your domain and then you'd go into your DNS settings. And in the DNS settings, you'd have to add this as like a TXT record. So this is probably too complicated for most people, but on the back end of DNS records, there are like CNAME records, there are TXT records, there's different records that you add into the settings there. So you have to add a couple pieces of code on the back end there, and then this will truly authenticate your email. And again, when you do that, that's part of the algorithm that determines whether you show up in the inbox or not.
And you know how to do this, right?
I know how to do this. That's right. I'm doing this for clients right now.
I'm good. I'm going to have to hire you, man.
Yes.
So that's one way of not getting into spam. But let me ask you this: how do you get from going? How do you make it so I can see those emails? Because, like I said, a lot of the emails that are sent to me, even though I've signed up for them, will end up either in the social or the promotions boxes, and I just miss them completely.
Well, Google's a complicated thing. So Google has their own record that you need to add into your DNS settings as well to help improve the chance that you end up in the inbox. Google's very specific on like certain words that if you use certain words in your headline, you're likely going to end up in promotions. So you have to be careful about what words you use and not trigger their system. And then there's also there's something called Postmaster Tools, which is a Google tool that you can you verify your domain through Postmaster Tools, and then you can look at the back end, and what it'll do is it'll tell you what your reputation is. So you have like an email reputation score, and you have one that's tied to your IP address, and you have one that's tied to your domain. So I have a client right now who all his Google mails have been going into spam, and so we've been spending quite a bit of time trying to figure out, okay, why are these going into spam? Why are they not going in the inbox? We authenticated the domain. That still didn't do the trick. But then when I connected to Postmaster Tools, I found out that his domain had a quote, bad reputation in Google. And that means that at one point he sent out an email blast and there were too many spam complaints or too many people throwing it into junk. So at one point he hurt the reputation of his domain. So at this point we're going to have to change the domain that he's using for email blasts. And then we're going to have to, then we could forward the replies to a different email address. So it's actually pretty complicated. Yeah.
This is kind of interesting because I actually didn't know about this tool, but if you go to postmaster.google.com, there's a whole tool there that allows you to do some of this stuff. So this is something that should actually be, we should do a whole webinar just on this particular subject because it goes pretty deep. Now I also wonder, you mentioned there's a bunch of words that you kind of on the no list that you don't want to use. Can you give me some examples of some of these words?
I don't really remember off the top of my head all the words. So again, when we do the webinar, I'll print out the list or something and I can kind of go through them. But I mean, like if you have something that probably the word buy or sometimes it's like things like act now. It's just like certain words that are very, very typical in email marketing messages. So they have like certain words and phrases that if they're used or they're used multiple times, it's going to trigger an alert that will more likely put you in spam.
Huh. Interesting. So I've gone through like Postmaster tools. I've got, you know, the code right. I've done my tweaks. So I'm sending my email. What type of content would you suggest is the best type of content to also make sure that people are going to pay attention, like from headline to body? But also, how do I not get into the social or promotions inbox? How do I get into the primary inbox? Because sometimes some emails do get into that, into my regular primary email mailbox.
It starts with building your reputation. So when you have a new domain, you really have no reputation score with that domain. So in the beginning, you want to be probably sending to smaller audiences and sort of building up your reputation score, and then not making a lot of offers, but sending more of like valuable content, your teaching content, blog content. You could send people to your blog, you could send people to your website, but don't make like overt marketing messages right off the bat. You're wanting to build your reputation score first. And when you do that, that's gonna help you to show up in the inbox a little bit later. So I would start by building up my reputation score in Google, especially. And again, if you provide content that Google deems is valuable and educational, especially in the beginning, you're more likely to show up in the inbox later on when you do marketing messages. So, and again, there's some caution to be tad when you're doing marketing messages, but that's one of the things that will get you in there.
Okay. And then as far as like headline and content, because I know that, you know, I do pay attention to the headlines of a lot of the, you know, emails that come through. And so what do you recommend as far as like what's going to get the most engagement to get someone to open it, an email, do you think?
I mean, it depends on the market. The headline is one of the most important things, because if you get into the inbox, number one is you got to get into the inbox, not the spam box. But number two is if you write like the body of your email and it's the most amazing email ever and your headline sucks, nobody's going to open it. And then it's kind of like there was no point in having it to begin with. So it needs to be something that's intriguing. If you kind of leave like an open loop, meaning you give some information, but you don't give the whole story. So it's like, I'm trying to think of this one tool changed my business, something like that. And it's kind of it doesn't answer what that one tool is, but something that is intriguing. So you need to be thinking in terms of, okay, how can I create an intriguing headline that's going to get somebody's attention and get them to open this email? And you need to know your audience. So what is going to motivate them to open it too? Because even if you're dealing with like an insurance audience versus a marketing audience, it's going to be a very different headline. So like an insurance audience is going to care more about that their assets are covered, that they're protected against liability issues, things like that. So it's kind of just knowing your audience, knowing what motivates them, and then creating a compelling headline that speaks to them.
Now I'm looking at like just going through some of my emails that are in the promotions box here, and where a lot of them end up. I'm looking at one from Lifehacker, which is a pretty good email. And this one is how much protein you really need, or here's how much protein you really need. So that's kind of interesting because I wonder like, how much is that? Right. And then I'm looking at other ones that are just kind of like product update, December. Like, I don't care about that, right? Unless it's a specific type of platform that I'm using on a regular basis. And then, you know, if it's something that's just like, you know, big sale on the 6th, I've definitely, you know, final hours, 50% off. I don't really care about that. Although when Envato sends me new freebies, that's something that I'm probably going to pay attention to because I like free things.
Yeah. Free things are, if you put like the word free in there, that can be attractive. Actually, that might, depending on how you do it, that might trigger the marketing thing though, too, in Google. So I'm still kind of looking through my email inbox right now, and I can just kind of, say a few that are attractive. Like when you talked about sales, here's one that says like early bird rate expires on December 7th. And that's kind of, you know, if you want to get in on the sale, that just kind of gives you the urgency. I'm just trying to find, I thought I saw one here. Let's see. I had one more. Okay, there's one that says don't make assumptions. That's kind of ambiguous. Achieve your holiday goals with innovations. And yeah, I mean, those are kind of interesting headlines. I mean, I'm just pulling these out of my inbox. Do you want to know your marketing automation score? So asking a question like that could be an interesting headline as well. One of the other things I wanted to talk about is the idea of formatting your emails. So when you've probably noticed this, if you've made your emails in MailChimp, you made them in Aweber, you've made them in Infusionsoft or Salesforce, whatever you send your emails through, your emails will show up differently on, you know, desktops. They'll show up differently in Outlook. They'll show up differently in Gmail. They'll show up differently in Yahoo. And so there are tools out there where you can customize the way they appear in every single platform. Now, the tools they're not really cheap. But the one that I've found to be the best, and this is the one that was recommended to me by a digital marketer at the company, is one called Litmus. So it's called Litmus. You can get a 7-day free trial with it, but it's going to cost you about $200 a month. So it's not a cheap tool. But it's got some very, very cool features, including it runs like advanced spam testing. So it'll tell you, it'll give you email addresses from them. And they'll send out an email to all the different platforms, and they'll tell you whether or not you ended up in the inbox and give you advice on how to fix it. So it's got some really cool features. It's if you know how to use the platform, it's really cool. Plus, you can customize each and every platform the look of how it's going to look. So you can actually have a different mobile email look than a desktop look, because a lot of these. You'll do formatting for it'll look great on desktop, but when you open it up in mobile, it'll look totally different. So it's kind of cool to be able to actually have that mobile responsive feature. And right now, Litmus is really the tool that you need to use to do that. And in the future, they might be able to add this to some of these email platforms, but right now it's the best way to do it.
Huh, interesting. So switching gears a little bit, you know, let me ask you this question, because I noticed that there are some emails that go out as really well-defined, you know, framed, like you can go into MailChimp, for instance, and get a template and add the pictures and make it look almost like a website. And then other people send email marketing messages that are just like a regular message. There's no pictures. It's just more text. Do you find that there's one that works better than the other? Or is this, again, depending on the market?
I think it depends on industry. I use very minimal images in my emails. So, and one of the things that's important is the speed of opening. So if you're using images, it's also important that you're condensing your files. So you don't want to send a big image file in an email, because that'll also make it more likely that you don't end up in the inbox because the speed of opening is too slow, and they don't like that on the email platform. So that's something that is of consideration as well, is that you're compressing your image files.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I personally, again, I found email marketing, if you're just doing marketing, I found it to be, I haven't really found a correlation between, you know, the higher end designs in traditional email marketing for what I do. I mean, I think if you're like a skincare product or you have something that's visual, it makes sense to have a more visual style for your emails. But again, as far as if you're selling services or things like that, I don't think it's really necessary. I mean, I'll typically have like the logo on top. I'll have a signature picture. You know, I might throw in one picture in the email, but I don't go all out with the fancy templates very often.
Okay. And why is that? Is that just a preference, or is it mostly just because you're trying to keep the bandwidth kind of lower?
Well, I'm trying to keep the bandwidth lower, but I don't see the difference in effectiveness. So I've experimented a little bit with the more fancy emails, and I don't really see a difference in one better than the other. So I'm going to go with the simpler option if that's the case.
Right, right. Okay, that makes sense. So switching gears a little bit, as far as like the types of like getting people to subscribe to an email, you know, we talked about reciprocity a few weeks ago. We talked about, you know, that the different types of engagement. But from your experience, what do you think is the best way to get people to sign up for your email and then make sure that they look for it.
I mean, you have to give something of actual value, especially this day and age, because there's so many people trying to get you on their email list. So the most important thing is that the lead magnet or the thing that you're giving away for free is something that's actually going to provide somebody with value. And it needs to be intriguing. It needs to be something that they really want. And that's really the most important thing, is that you're giving something that actually has value. It can't just be, you know, you can't just give anything anymore like you used to be able to and get everybody to opt in, because people are more cognizant of who they give their email address to because of this reason. So to me, it's just about how much value are you giving? And that's the most important thing to get somebody to opt in. Now, I think that PDFs still work fine. As long as the content is of value. And also one thing to consider is you actually want your lead magnets to be smaller in length, because you want your audience to be able to consume them in, like, you know, 10 to 15 minutes. You don't want to send like a 200 page ebook as your lead magnet, because people will likely, they'll download it, but they're not likely to consume the whole content. So as far as like a marketing campaign goes, it doesn't work as well when they're not able to consume it in, you know, I'd say 5 to 15 minutes.
Okay. So keep it short, keep it sweet, but give them something of value.
Yep. That's what I would say.
Okay. Okay. And as far as like, you know, this type of thing, can you give me some of the industries that you work for and some of the lead magnets that have been successful for those industries?
Thinking off the top of my head. I have a terrible memory you put me on the spot like this. Let me get back to you on that. So
Okay. Have you thought about it now? How about now?
Not yet.
How about now? Okay. So now as far as like somebody who is just starting their kind of email path, if you will, there's also autoresponders, right? Can you explain a little bit what a autoresponder does and how that works?
Yes, I can. An autoresponder is a tool for automation. So when somebody subscribes to your list, you basically have a predefined sequence that gets delivered on a predefined time schedule. So I'll use these a lot, especially with opt-ins, to deliver like a 5-email sequence, at least in the beginning. And the point is to indoctrinate people into your brand and then to move them into some kind of an offer. Now, that offer doesn't have to be like a big paid offer. It might just be to check out your blog. It might just be to hop on a webinar. It might be to book a call, or it might be a paid offer. But you want to take them from indoctrination into some kind of call to action at the end of the 5-email sequence. And so I do those a lot for clients right now. I tend to write a lot of these sequences for them. But the way it works is you set this up like a lot of people use MailChimp because it's free to have up to 2,000 contacts on MailChimp. But you would go in there, you would set up an email that gets delivered. So as soon as somebody opts in, you could set up an email that gets delivered instantly. If you're giving away like a free PDF, you can attach that PDF to the email, which is smarter than putting it on the thank you page, because there are tools out there that people can find your thank you page without opting in. And they'd be able to download it if they were to figure that out. So it's better to attach the gift to the email, or even if it's a video series, you know, have it embedded in the email. And then you're going to indoctrinate them. You want to tell them about your brand on email. So I'd say like email number one is kind of welcome. Email number two is kind of describing the brand, what you offer, and you're taking them kind of you're creating a story, you're creating a journey, and ultimately you're making some kind of an offer. Like, again, it might be a free webinar. It might be a free strategy call. It might be a free entry, or not a free, but a paid entry level offer. So probably a lower cost offer, depending on what your services are. It can be really low, or it can be kind of mid range. But that's essentially what you're doing. So you're creating an automated beginning sequence, and you don't want to stretch it out. In my opinion, you don't want to stretch these out too long, because, you know, content changes often. There might be current events and things. So I would probably encourage like a 5 to 10 email automation sequence, and then start sending some email, they call email blasts, or where you just are sending live emails to the people on your list, and you can just send those on the fly. So those are in real time.
You, you,
Yeah.
I just want to jump in here when you talk about an email sequence. So this is where you'll send out like an automated email. Someone signs up for your email. The email automatically gets sent to the person who opted in. And then you can do these various sequences. So if somebody decides to open up the email or download the content, it will know that you downloaded the content and it'll ask you about it. If you didn't download the content, it will send a different email that will say, hey, we noticed you didn't open it. Do you have any questions about it? And then maybe it might take you through a different process that will eventually lead to a point of sale or an offer. And that's if somebody true. Doesn't click on that offer, then you'll get sent into a different track. Or if someone does click on it but doesn't purchase, then you'll get another automated email that will say, hey, we noticed that you went to this page, but you didn't purchase. Do you have any questions? Is there anything that's holding you back? And you might restart the sales process in a different way. So part of the thing with an automation sequence is that it's like a choose your own adventure. If you do this, then this will happen. If you do that, this other thing will happen.
It's kind of like in programming, like if then statements. So it depends on the software you're running. Like MailChimp doesn't have an advanced automated sequence, but Infusionsoft does, ActiveCampaign does, ConvertKit does.
But those cost more money, right? Like, how much is like an Infusionsoft?
Infusionsoft, it starts at 100 a month or like 97 a month, and that's for a small list. That's I think it's only 500 contacts, and it goes up to. I mean, I pay 300 a month for what I use it for, but I also have e-commerce integrations and different things. So, like with mine, I can do what you're talking about. So if I can set it up a campaign, and if somebody opts in, I could have a 10 email follow-up sequence, but I might, on email number three, I might have a link for them to click. And if they click the link in email number three, then they get taken out of that sequence. So they don't get all 10 emails. They only get the three emails because they clicked the link on time. And then they get moved into a different sequence. And I can also set up automation that if they purchase, they get pulled out of the whole thing at any point. But if they don't purchase, then I'm sending what you talked about. Like, I noticed you went to the landing page, but you didn't purchase. So kind of following up and making it more behavioral based, and it feels more personalized because you're kind of tracking the behaviors of the user. And then one other concept that will come up is if you're really keeping track of your list, there's also this whole thing of list management. And if somebody stopped opening your emails for, let's say, 90 days plus, those are people that you're going to want to move out of your main email campaigns, and you're going to want to put them into a campaign for re-engagement. So something like, do you still want to hear from us? Just confirm that you still want to hear it from us, and then you put them back into the main list. And if they don't, then you want to take those people off your list. So you want to be periodically scrubbing your list, because the more people that kind of open your emails also, the better your reputation score. So.
Yeah. And you know, this gets into buying list and the dangers around maybe buying a list, because if you have an email list, and I actually have run into this problem where somebody wanted me to send emails out through a purchase list, spam laws are very, very intense. And if you send out a bunch of emails and too many people report spam on that list, they will shut down your account.
Absolutely. Yeah. It's a big deal. If you, if you buy a list the way to do this is I would call it throttling. So you want to send it to if you had a list of 2000, I'd probably send out 100 at a time to kind of test the list, because I don't want to get a lot of spam complaints all at once, or they will shut down your account. So, there are ways of doing it. Obviously, it's not a best practice ever to cold email people in bulk, because according to the spam laws, it's a no-no, and it's not a best practice. But the reality is, a lot of people do it still. So it's still a pretty common practice out there, but it's not a best practice to do this. There are email scrubbing softwares out there, because if you do an email blast and it turns out that some of the emails we call bounce, meaning that they don't they're no longer they no longer exist, and they don't even get delivered. That will that'll hurt your reputation score, and it'll make it more likely you end up in spam. And also, if you have syntax errors, so like if you have an Excel document and one of the emails is justin.com, you know, so there's a syntax error, there's two periods, not one, then that will also hurt your deliverability in that blast. So there are softwares out there that will do this for you, that will actually scrub your list, and they just charge you by how many people are on the list, and they'll scrub it for you. Or you could just kind of go through and throttle it and go slower, and it won't be the impact is lower if you have, you know, if you're getting one complaint on a list of 100, the impact's lower than if you're getting, you know, 10 complaints on a blast of 2,000 or things like that. And services like MailChimp, they absolutely will shut down your account. And if you in affiliate marketing, Andros, MailChimp has a strict policy on affiliate marketing. So if you're promoting somebody else's product, a lot of times they'll send you the email copy that they want you to send to the list. And if you do that and MailChimp determines that it's a commonly used email text, they will ban your account. So that's a newer thing. So if they see that this text has been used by other marketers, they will ban your account right on the spot for a violation of doing affiliate marketing through MailChimp.
Wow. Now, I mean, you know, we live in a day and age where everybody talks about mostly social media marketing and search engine marketing. How important is the email marketing in this day and age, would you say, especially as people are using more like WhatsApp to communicate or, you know, direct messaging? Where does this fall in line, would you say?
It's still more important than people realize. So it's still very important, but the importance has dropped significantly over time, but it's still actually one of the most profitable ways of marketing, and especially remarketing to your existing customers. So it's a strong way of reaching people. And if you have a warmer list that engages with you, that can be a very valuable tool still. Now, again, if you're cold emailing, it might be worthless. You might not be able to get anybody engaging with cold emails, depending on how you go about it. But if you're doing it right and you're doing it for the right purposes, then yeah, it still is a very valuable marketing tool. But we are moving into more of Messenger, and we're moving into more WhatsApp, and we're moving into different platforms. But email is still pretty much everybody uses email still, so it's still a valid platform. So that's what I would say.
That's really interesting. Anything else that you would say? Like, what's the, like, if you were just starting to grow your list, what would be kind of the main thing you'd want to advise somebody?
I think that to do it right, exercise patience, I guess, would be the best thing to do, because to do it right, you want to grow your list with engaged people. So if you're going to, you know, networking groups and you put out a fishbowl and people are throwing in their card and you're just adding them to your list, it's almost like emailing cold traffic. Yeah, they gave you their business card, but they probably don't know who you are. So the more people kind of know who you are and remember you, the better your results are going to be over time. And it's really about quality lists versus size of the list, especially this day and age. So, I mean, you could have a million person list, but if the open rate is terrible, then, you know, it's not as valuable as a list of 1,000 people that are constantly engaging with the emails and opening the emails and they have a relationship with you. So to me, it's about the quality of the list over the size of the list.
Huh. Okay. I know one thing that doesn't really worry about size that much. You know what that is?
What is it?
Oh, yeah. It's sex robots. That's right. They don't care. They don't give a bite.
Is this new music?
No, man. This is
like, okay. All right.
Yeah, we got our mama, mama. All right. Yes, ladies and gentlemen, it is time for the Sex Robot Report, brought to you by the Marketing Geeks. I got a really interesting story. This brings in politics and sex robots. Although, from good old House of Cards, The best line of that entire series was, everything is about sex, except for sex. That's about power. So,
interesting statement.
Yeah, especially coming from a guy who is now looking for his career under a rock. So, this is from Ross Story. Sex robot conference featuring Steve Bannon implodes as he loses multiple Montana speaking gigs. So for those of you who don't know Steve Bannon, he worked with President 45, and he looks like the guy on the spaceship who's trying to hide his disease from the rest of the crew.
He was also the former editor at Breitbart.
That's right. That's right. Very interesting guy. And recently he's been spotted in Europe. Where I happen to be right now, trying to set up political campaigns for people who are, let's just say, don't believe that the Nazis should have lost the World War II.
Well, let me ask you this, Andres, because if Steve Bannon's not going to the conference, does that mean there's an opening?
That's a good question, and we should look into that, because I would love to bring the sex robot report directly to this conference. But according to Ross Story, former White House advisor Steve Bannon was supposed to headline a sex robot conference and has lost multiple speaking gigs since it was announced. Well, I don't know.
It's quite a shift from working in the White House to headlining a sex robot conference. It's interesting.
I'm just backtracking on like your suggestion that we should go speak at the sex robot conference, because I don't want to lose multiple speaking gigs. The Montana Camian, a student newspaper at the University of Montana, reported Tuesday that the Athenian Parisian Free Speech Forum, a debate event Bannon was supposed to participate in, was canceled after growing outcry from the UM community. It was stated that Camian noted the third of his appearances has been canceled since news broke that he was a keynote speaker at the fourth annual Congress of Love and Sex with Robotics. The Sex Robot Conference itself was canceled along with the 15 International Conference on Advances in Computer Entertainment Technology, the Missilla Current reported. Both conferences were organized by Adrian Chick and the director of the Malaysia-based Imagineering Institute. So
let me get this straight. So there's a conference called Love and Sex with Robotics, and this is the fourth time it's happened. Interesting.
I guess so, and I've never been invited. So, you know.
I learn so much from this report every week.
It's so true. So GOP strategist Rick Wilson, meanwhile, joked that there is now a, quote, opening for a speaker at a sex robot conference in Montana since they iced out Steve Bannon, or as he's known by his non-debot Real Doll fan, 69XXX. Oh, boy. So I'm a little confused as to why someone would invite Steve Bannon to a sex robot conference, but you know, all I can say is that maybe they're trying to prototype a Steve Bannon sex robot to basically make it so nobody will ever have sex with a robot. Ever. So that's all I got for this week for the Sex Robot Report, ladies and gentlemen.
Very, very informative.
Yeah. And next week we will bring you more exciting sex robot news.
We're breaking down the stereotypes. We're breaking down the stigmas.
That's right. That's right. So, all right. So on to the final portion of our show. We've got some really interesting geek news for you. This is kind of interesting. Have you seen Between Two Ferns with,
Yeah, I have.
Yeah.
Yep.
So
Zach Galifianakis.
Yeah. It's the guy, the man. I commend you for being able to pronounce his last name. There has been a Between Two Ferns movie that has been secretly filming, And so now there's going to be a Between Two Ferns movie, I guess.
So is that going to be like a Borat where it's hidden cameras combined with scripted material probably?
I have no idea, but if you haven't seen Between Two Ferns, you could Google it or just go on YouTube. And the one he did one with Brad Pitt that was so funny. But for my money,
he actually had Hillary Clinton. Hillary Clinton came on the show. That was
interesting. Yeah. He actually pulled. He actually retired the show and he pulled it out of retirement for Hillary Clinton. But for my money, I'm actually more of a Eric Andre fan. And if you haven't seen Eric Andre show, by all means, please Google that and watch some of his interviews because that's pretty good. So yeah, there's a, I'm not sure exactly how that's going to work, but there is a Between Two Ferns movie that is being made. So what do you got for me?
I mean, it's intriguing.
It's intriguing.
I got Rambo 5 has wrapped filming. So all of you Rambo fans out there, it's happening. Well, aren't we excited that we're getting a fifth Rambo movie and Rambo's going to take on a drug cartel this time? And he wears a cowboy hat in the released photo. So we're getting Cowboy Rambo versus the drug cartel. I mean, what more could you ask for?
Not that, I guess.
Well, yeah. I mean, this whole thing of these like sequels like this, they've all been terrible. Like none of them have been good. There's been like a lot of these recently, especially like The Predator. I told you how bad that movie was. So oh, yeah. I have very little faith in this movie being good, but
God, that was really a disappointment. That I wish that The Predator was better because I love Shane Black. I love the concept. I was hoping that would be a reboot that would really like get things going. But no, I mean, how do you take such a great property and just continuously mess it up? I mean,
I don't know. I just don't get it. And all right, next in geek news, Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse is being released. I believe it's this weekend or the next weekend, and it's getting very impressive reviews. And this is a movie where it's animated. It's a computer graphics movie where they are taking all the different versions of Spider-Man and somehow combining them into some sort of a story. But you have people like, you have Peter Parker, the traditional Spider-Man, who's played by Nicolas Cage in this movie. You have Miles Morales, who is a Spider-Man in the Ultimate series, I think. Uh-huh. And then you have Spider-Gwen, and I don't know what else. Those are the three I know, but there's more.
Yeah, and 100% approval rating on Rotten Tomatoes, 100%. So far from the advanced reviews, everybody loves it. So it's supposed to be...
I think the Lego movie guys are behind it. I think it's the guys that were supposed to do Han Solo are behind this movie, and people love their movies. The two Lego movies got reviewed very highly as well.
Yeah, something that's not getting as good reviews, but I'm actually still looking forward to it, is Mortal Engines, which I read the book, which very entertaining, but not getting the best reviews. So, but I'll probably still see it. I mean, my son is now 4 and he's almost at the 8. Like I could take him to Into the Spider-Verse and I know he's going to dig it. But some of the more like intense live action stuff, I still, got to wait till he's a little older. And how about your son? He's too young.
He's too young still. I mean, he'll probably appreciate the visuals and things like that. He likes Elmo right now. That's his big That's his big one. But it's more about the music than than anything else.
Yeah, you should show him Caligula. See how he likes that.
Caligula. Okay.
Yeah.
I don't even know what that is, but I'll show it to him.
Yeah. Just start playing it. The two of you should watch it together. You'll love it. Finally, in real geek news, this is pretty awesome. NASA sends a spacecraft to meet with an asteroid that's on a collision course with Earth. Bum, bum, bum. I wonder if they put Bruce Willis on that spacecraft.
But somebody better call Bruce Willis and Steve Buscemi.
That's right. So NASA has sent a spacecraft called the Orus REX, and it's finally reached the asteroid known as 101955 Bennu, which may be on a collision course with Earth after traveling just over 2 years since its launch in September 2016. The mission, which will bring Gaines back to us to study on Earth, is the latest to return in asteroid samples to Earth just after the Japanese Space Academy, Space Agency missions, I'm going to mess up this name so bad, Hayabusa 1 and 2 and Stardust. This is from thenextweb.com. The data will help unveil more about the origins of the solar system and how to protect the Earth from possible asteroid impact. And all I say is just send Bruce Willis, right?
But the sad part is, I believe Bruce Willis had to sacrifice himself to save Ben Affleck. So that's the sadder part of this whole story.
Yeah, that's true. So if we had to give up Bruce Willis for Ben Affleck, boy.
I think let's switch it up this time. Let's give up Ben Affleck for Bruce Willis.
Oh, gladly. Gladly. So the spacecraft will spend the next year completing a detailed survey of the surface of Bennu. And it's 492 meters in diameter, including locating most suitable landing sites. And once the site is selected, the spacecraft will land for about 5 seconds to collect a sample of the surface material using a burst of nitrogen gas to liberate material from the surface, including the sampler head. And the spacecraft has enough gas to attempt 3 sample collections from the surface and will hopefully provide a sample between 60 grams and 2,000 grams of surface material. And it will start heading back to Earth in 2021 and get here in 2023, just in time for the end of Marvel Phase 4.
Oh, wow. That's just in time. Speaking of Marvel Phase 3, no, I guess we're in 3. Yeah. Captain Marvel's trailer was released this week, which, the technology on the de-aged Samuel L. Jackson is pretty incredible. It looks great. Movie trailer looks fine. I'm not, like, super excited for it, but I think it looks pretty good. I'm sure it's going to be a good movie.
Yeah, I'm sure it's going to be great. The Marvel movies, I got to admit, it's kind of like sex with the robot. It varies from absolutely mind-blowing excellent to pretty darn good. And with that, another episode of The Marketing Geeks, ladies and gentlemen.
I did want to say that Ron Burgundy is doing a podcast. So Will Ferrell will be playing Ron Burgundy on his own podcast coming up soon. And if you didn't know, I'm a fan of Ron Burgundy, and you might know where I use some of his lines on the show.
That's right. That's right. Just to pick them right up, use them for yourself. Ladies and gentlemen, do you have any questions that you want to ask us about marketing? We will answer them for you. Reach out to us on LinkedIn. We mostly answer every single inquiry. Email us. We have an email address. What's the email address?
realmarketinggeeks@gmail.com. You can email us at realmarketinggeeks@gmail.com.
And with that, we close out another fabulous edition. If you loved our show, please at least leave a comment, say how much you like it, rate us very highly, invite 5,000 of your closest friends. And if you really, really love us, go to the Patreon page, link below, put a tip in the tip jar. We love you guys. Thank you so much.
Remember, just $1 will get you a shout out on the show. $5 will get you a shout out plus copies of all the webinar files. And with that, stay classy.